Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Is it not Friday yet?
It is for me.
Yes. Later today, I'm going to get in the 2017 Chevy Tahoe.
White lightning.
And head.
What?
It's too early.
And head east.
Oh, you head east, young man.
Yeah, gonna go retrieve my big brother from upstate New York.
About time we bring him.
And bring Mickey back for a couple of weeks.
About time we bring Mickey Cochran back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we missed him.
Now, at his age, he has to pee every 3 miles. Do you think it might take us a while to get back?
Well, combined with his peeing schedule and your peeing schedule.
On the road again.
You guys should wear astronaut diapers on the way back.
I was in a band called Astronaut Diapers. I had a chance to talk to John Dean yesterday. John Dean is, of course, legendary because of his association with Richard Nixon and the Watergate cover-up and his afterlife. He's a brilliant guy. He's about 80 years old now, I guess. And he's a CNN regular contributor, and he was getting ready to go to Washington because he's going to be analyzing the Comey testimony tomorrow. There's a big FISA hearing today first, where a lot of what's going to come up tomorrow will also come up today. But anyway, John Dean, the interview with John Dean, we'll have that coming up in a little bit. Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady will join us after 7 o'clock. We're doing some politics today, but you guys will talk to Chuck Todd tomorrow when I'm gone?
Yes, we will indeed. A lot to talk about with him, as usual.
Yeah, and we got to figure out, I assume we're going to carry, and we may just dip in, but I think we ought to carry the bulk of the Comey testimony, which starts at 9 our time.
Yeah, we're going to do it as the 9:30 big story for sure, and for those who want to listen to the entire testimony, it'll be on WGNradio.com and our WGN Plus.
Did you have this meeting without me?
No, it was an email.
No.
But I know you don't have the password to get into the email.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what station I'm on. Dean, of course, later. And then Danny Trejo, if you know Danny. Danny is, you know Danny, the actor? Danny Trejo?
Danny Trejo?
Yeah.
Is that Rick's brother?
Is that the guy who's better, like the heavy and with the big long hair? And
I was thinking Dance Fever.
He hosts the new show, Man at Arms, Art of War, in which a team of expert craftsmen reproduce legendary weapons from scratch.
Cool.
Yeah.
My God.
We were both thinking of Denny Terrio.
Yeah, same guy.
Okay, then I do know him.
Yeah,
he makes all kinds of weapons. Because I've always wanted a flamethrower.
You have? Oh, let me write that down. Flamethrower.
I thought you wanted an axe after your axe throwing.
Can you get me one of those?
Oh, I was pretty good at throwing that axe.
What's this thing, the swing that's got the ball on the end of it with the spikes?
Mace?
The Iron Maiden?
No.
That's a paddle ball thing?
The hammer throw?
It's like a pole or a handle. It's like a golf club.
I think it's called a mace.
It's really called a mace?
Is it really?
I think you're right, John.
I think I'm correct.
I would have stayed with the joke.
Because when you think medieval weapons, you think John DeCoss and Dan Bennett.
Is that from Game of Thrones?
Game of DeCoss.
I think it's called a flail.
A flail?
Yeah.
You're not watching the Cooking Network?
Are you talking about the ball with spikes on the end of it? That's a flail, I think.
Okay, well, you think or you know?
I know. I'm looking at
you're
it right
a crackerjack
now.
Journalist. Right. We need actual facts here.
Now, I got the facts.
With balls and spikes.
Steve Grzanich is right. It's a flail is a spiked version of the long-handled peasant flails, which is a spiked bat with basically a ball on the end. The ball could be spiked, too.
It's buy it right now on eBay, by the way. Too.
How much?
The lowest bid is $12.99.
Okay, but the ones I'm looking at, they don't have the swing. Oh, there's one with a swing on the end.
It looks kind of like a...
And that says, that was a mace search.
Oh, that is?
Yes.
Okay, so it is called a mace.
Yes.
And it looks like a nunchuck.
It doesn't say that they use in karate. Wikipedia also says it's commonly used as threshing.
How does Vandeveld know nunchuck?
Because my son is a black belt.
Everyone knows nunchucks.
Yeah.
That's like a 60s thing.
It really depends on what gang you're in. bunch my of, gang, we call them
this
mace.
Is like the
bunch
weapon
of aging
lesson.
Ninjas.
Oh, it is. It could be called a mace and chain, mace and chain.
Uh huh. Yeah. Uh huh.
A chain mace or a military flail.
Wow, I've lost interest. All right, so we're going to get you. What did you want, a flamethrower?
Yes.
All right, we'll get you a flamethrower.
Perfect.
At 6:16, we'll take a break for traffic here. Mary has that, and then she'll have more weapon updates.
I'll bring in the nunchucks.
Ninja updates, nunchuck updates, and then let's see. Oh, we'll come back with the top six at six in just a second.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
That Jabbar interview at Printers Row Lit Fest, is Roper doing that interview?
I believe so, yeah.
Why wouldn't you have somebody from the Tribune do that? Isn't the Lit Fest a Tribune thing?
Printers Row Lit Fest is a Tribune sponsored event, I believe, mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it's Roper. He's a national figure, but it just seems, and I like Rich, but that seems weird.
You can go to printersrowlitfest.org for more information.
Yeah, and you should, but I'm just saying that, we're not going to do next year during the Walk of Fame. Eric and Kathy won't be hosting. It just seems.
They won't.
Did they buy the Sun Times overnight or something? Did I miss something?
I think it's going to be a done deal by Friday, though.
So, all right. Well, like I said, it's not a knock on Rich. I like Rich, but it seems like somebody from the Tribune ought to be hosting that. Like Pearson. Pearson would be perfect for that.
Pearson's a sports guy. Rick Hogan does a lot of those interviews as well. Does a great job with those interviews.
Hogan's good, but I don't know that. Yeah, I guess Hogan's a bit of a sports guy, too. I know he's a golfer.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But people don't know. Pearson's a big sports nut.
Rick is?
Oh, yeah.
I know. Huge hockey fan, obviously.
Well, baseball, too.
Yeah.
And hoops. All right, top six at six. Here we go. The Chicago Tribune, speaking to them, reveals that for years, the county's property tax system shows residential assessments are so out of whack. So out of whack, the entire credibility of the property tax system ought to be brought into question every single minute of every day. Now, for those of us a little more on the inside, you go, no S, Sherlock.
Yeah.
But the general population doesn't think of it that way.
Well,
In other words, every single time you file for an appeal of your property taxes, the reason you're likely to get it, even in your case going six times.
Right.
Is because the numbers are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are completely out of whack. The assessor's office says, listen to this, it doesn't check for fairness and accuracy.
It's ridiculous. It's insane.
But they admitted it.
I know. It's we've been saying this for years. You pay assessments on a parking space that you own. And if you and I live next door to each other, we have the same square footage, the same condo,
we live right next door to each other.
I could be paying $2,000 more than you.
The assessor's office, let this sink in, says it does not check its own work for fairness and accuracy in analyzing more than 100 million property tax records for 12 years between 2003 and 2015, along with thousands of pages of documents. The Tribune process took more than a year. They found the property tax system is a joke and a bad joke.
Yep. Yep. Okay,
well, what do we do now about this?
Great question.
What you don't do is elect to say the guy that already has the gig or elect people that continue to appoint the people that have the gig. Mm-hmm. And maybe you take a hard look at J.B. Pritzker since he benefited from the system that's so broken and defended it.
And then do we also appeal every year? Is that?
Oh, yeah, you should.
You have to appeal every year. And don't be fooled, too, because there's lawyers and people out there who will try to say, well, we'll appeal this for you. You have a better chance of getting your appeals overturned or lowered if you hire an attorney. That process is free two times a year.
It is free, but the lawyers that are on the inside will get it fast-tracked.
I agree. Yep.
They'll get it fast-tracked because, and I'm not saying all lawyers are like this, but some of them are part of the dirty system as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
So Joe Berrios has a lot to answer for, and he's welcome here as well.
Especially in these...
Let's just line up guests that refuse to appear. So we got Madigan, Berrios, Pritzker. Let's just make a list of guests that refuse to appear, and let's see what the common tie is. Oh, yeah, it's Mike.
Trump.
You know, the other thing about this property tax
Trump
thing
as well.
Doesn't this really put the state even in more jeopardy? Because if you imagine everybody in Cook County appealed their taxes, that would make the state's finances even worse.
Right, because then you have to hire more people to consider those appeals.
Or give rebates or whatever you have to do.
Well, you went six times or four?
I went four times.
You went four times.
In person.
Four times before you got relief.
Right.
J.B. Pritzker got $240,000 immediately.
I need to call.
I don't think the system's screwed up at all.
I got to call him.
Let me crumple this piece of paper up and throw it at them. President Trump is taking credit for Saudi Arabia's move to isolate its neighbor, Qatar, or Qatar, or a cutie, however you'd like to pronounce it, rattling his national security staff because this is not only a crucial strategic relationship. We have hundreds of military personnel on the ground in Qatar. The problem is the fast tweet from the president yesterday was, again, without fact and without taking a deep breath to check, because by 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon, CNN's reporting had determined that Russia created fake documents and a fake email that led to the Qatar claim, and Qatar actually is not involved in any of the nefarious activities that led to all of the hoopla yesterday morning.
What?
I'm not saying Qatar's not dirty. They could well be dirty. But in the case of this, Russia made it up. I don't make stuff up.
My head.
Russia made it up. James Comey, fearing for the FBI's independence and the agency's director, told Jeff Sessions, I don't want to be alone with President Trump. Imagine that. Imagine the head of the FBI says, I do not want to be alone with the president of the United States. Do not put me in that situation. The president asked Mr. Comey to end an investigation of his former national security advisor, the now disgraced General Michael Flynn. Sessions, meanwhile, yesterday, it was revealed, has had several screaming matches with the president and offered to resign. 2 days ago in Politico, a well-sourced report said Reince Priebus would like to resign, but no one wants to be chief of staff. How about that? You can't hire the people you need in the State Department. You can't fill the positions you need to fill out the government because nobody wants to work for this White House.
And now we're seeing why there's so much nepotism going on, because nobody wants to work, so he'll have his family members appointed.
He ain't got enough family members to fill all these openings.
Yeah.
By the way, I mentioned the Tribune story earlier.
Yeah.
The author of it, Jason Grotto or Grotto?
Grotto.
Grotto? Jason Grotto will join us after 9 this morning. Nice job, Chamber. At least one person killed and several more injured in assaults on Tehran by ISIS. That's right, ISIS in Iran. This has a couple of long-reaching impacts. One is, does it weaken the argument that ISIS is Iran if ISIS is attacking in Iran? And secondarily, it's the first time ISIS has attacked inside Iran and inside the borders, which would likely get Iran into a position to fight ISIS as well. You would hope they would help. They could help from the inside out. We'll see. More than a dozen mayors are going to be in Chicago today for a three-day Chicago forum on global cities, trying to figure out the best way for big cities to get along, not only with their states, but with the government as well, and to actually benefit the people that live in Chicago. And how about Scooter Gennett? Is that his name?
That is his name, Scooter Gennett.
17th player, Dave, is that the number?
17th player to hit 4 home runs in a game. He is the first Cincinnati Red to do it, and think about that. Think of
crazy.
I mean, with
the Cincinnati Red Stockies, right? They go back to 1862 or something.
Yeah, and the Big Red Machine and Big Clue and Frank Robinson.
Yeah.
But here's the other part of this, Steve. No player in Major League history ever did what Gennett did last night. 5 hits, 4 home runs, and 10 RBIs.
It's a pretty good game. Pretty good game.
Especially for a guy who began the night with 38 home runs in his career.
That's pretty amazing.
And
crazy.
3 on the season. And he homered. He singled his first time up, drove in a run.
What the hell did he have for lunch?
No kidding. And he was a guy they picked up off waivers in spring training. He is only the second player to hit 4 home runs, including a grand slam. Mark Whitten did that for St. Louis against Cincinnati.
He should be submitted to mandatory medical testing immediately.
Don't you think?
Right? I mean, how does he go from that guy
to
that guy?
He just had one of those nights.
It's a good baseball name. It's an 18.
It's a great name.
It's a 19th century era baseball name, Scooter Gennett.
Scooter Gennett.
So congratulations. American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, just brought you the top 6 at 6.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I want to thank everybody very much for being here, and let's get to work. We're going to get to work and get it done. Thank you all very much.
Mr. President, what message do you have to Jim Comey ahead of his testimony?
I wish him luck. Thank you, everybody.
I don't think that's true. I don't think President Trump got up this morning to wish Jim Comey luck. She cried through the southern wind. The Steve Cochran Show continues. That's a great song. Where'd you find this, Jake? You know the song?
I don't think so. Oh, yeah. No.
Jake, I think, is secretly 75 years old. He's got musical references that he shouldn't know.
Right.
All right, at 6:43, I talked to, a guy that knows more about White House scandals than most of us, John Dean. He was Nixon's top advisor for a period of time when it appeared that he was going to be set up by Nixon and H.R. Alderman and Ehrlichman. And who was the nut that had the talk show for? Oh, Gordon Liddy, G. Gordon Liddy. He bailed, essentially flipped, turned state's evidence. He's had an interesting post-White House career after being disbarred and spending, I think it was 4 or 5 months in a jail, in a minimum security situation. And he's acquitted himself quite well and is now an expert on the Trump mess. He'll speak with authority on CNN tomorrow about it, but he talked to me yesterday. And one of the questions I wanted to know is, I mean, what do you expect? What do you expect Comey to say when he sits down tomorrow?
Well, first, I think he's going to be a good witness. He's very experienced. He's gone through two confirmations, which is a bit of a baptism for anybody. First as Deputy Attorney General, then as Director of the FBI. In both those jobs, he went to the Hill a lot, so he knows his way around up there. To me, the first clue will be, does he come with a prepared statement? If he does, that means he's carefully thought out and written down and planned what he's going to say. That isn't his norm. He tends to come up to the Hill and just sort of talk off the top and say, okay, now I'm here to answer any of your questions, which is going to be harder in this situation because everything we know has been leaked.
Right.
And it's not the best way to do it. So I don't know what he'll do, whether he'll have a prepared statement or whether he'll have some notes or how he'll do it. But that's our first clue to see how carefully he's thought out what he wants to do.
The association he has with Bob Mueller, who seems to be almost universally loved for the position that he's in, is one of professional relations, and there may be some sort of professional courtesy between the two of them. Do you think there's any presumed restrictions he would have on what he would say so that he could, quote, save the good stuff for Mueller?
Well, I think that there have been a couple reports out that he and Mueller have talked and there are no restrictions on him. That's hard to believe because, one, Mueller is so new into the investigation. I'm not sure he knows all of the sort of the danger points. And neither man, I think, want to somehow prejudice any prosecution or disrupt one. So I think there will be care. And they're both, you know, experienced prosecutors. They know the dangers of taking that information public at the wrong time. So I think it's just inherent that they probably trust each other. They know each other well enough, and they probably trust each other that Mueller thinking that Comey will do the right thing, and Comey, in essence, assuring Mueller that'll be the case. He doesn't want to mess up any further prosecution cases that develop from the investigation.
Talking with John Dean, of course, you do have to take the long view and you have to be a better man, right? Because certainly we're all human, or at least, though I question this about the president, we're all human beings. And Comey is in a position where revenge could be on his mind, the way he was fired, the treatment that he maybe felt he didn't deserve. And if he's got a lot of coal to throw on the fire, he could certainly do it. But he also is in a position, correct me if I'm wrong, to be very strategic or pragmatic about this to maybe help the Mueller case along.
Well, you know, I think from what we know that certainly he didn't go over to the White House and have dinner with the president to set him up. Mm-hmm. I think he might have anticipated that. What I'm wondering is if they at all gamed it at the FBI with his top investigators, say, okay, what happens if the president leans on me? What happens if the president does this or that? I don't know if they did that, but it doesn't appear he then tried to entrap Trump in any way, but rather he said he tried to manage the situation has been the wording used, meaning, as I read that, He's got a rookie president who may do the wrong thing, and he tried to steer him away from it.
Right. That was my take as well. Now, I grew up as a kid in the Watergate era, but there's a human factor.
So did I.
Yes, you did. I'm looking at the picture right now. But there's a human factor to all of this as well, including the fact that you got a bunch of people in the White House who are government employees. They're not six-figure rich folks running around who can afford expensive attorneys. They, I assume, are getting pressure at home. You know, nobody, no wives or husbands want their husbands or wives back at the White House to go to jail over any of this, and lawyers are expensive. You went through this. At what point does it reach that boiling point where you go, I'm off this ship, and I'm going to tell people what I know. The loyalty hasn't been returned by Mr. Trump anyway, and I'm not going down for this.
Well, it's an interesting point. I don't know if they'll set up some sort of defense fund. I know that Bill Clinton talked about that, and to some extent he followed through and helped people who had legal expenses after he got out of the White House. And I don't know if – I've not heard any talk of that yet from the Trump White House, because they don't really even acknowledge they've got any problems yet. So it is tough for the staffers. And they lawyers are expensive, and people do get worried. They don't want to do the wrong thing. And if they – I think that doesn't happen until – witnesses start being called before grand juries, and that's when people start hiring lawyers. So it's a little bit early still, and I don't know that it will happen to that degree. The people who were aware of it came in with the problems, and they've already probably made their plans. I mean, people like Bannon and Miller and Priebus, I suspect, have thought this through, and they're with the exception maybe of Miller, all able to afford attorneys.
I'm not sure Priebus can. That's a part one of the conversation with John Dean. Pat Brady's here, and we'll be here for the 7 o'clock hours. Reince, got any money?
Yeah, Reince is a successful lawyer from across the border up there in Wisconsin. But
it's not, you know, if you're looking at throwing $100,000 at legal fees over the next year.
Hundreds is the entry fee.
Yeah.
I mean, the retainers in these cases can be $500,000.
Yeah. So
it's a lot of money, but depends on culpability, too. If he's not involved in anything, doesn't have to talk to his lawyers as much.
So.
But it's not, he's got kids he wants to send to college, too, so I think he'd rather spend his money there than defending himself against what Donald Trump did.
Steve Grzanich is on the 7th, and Andrea, Steve and I were just talking, Andrea, and you guys have both confirmed we have a new FBI nominee.
Well, Trump tweeting this morning, just about 5 minutes ago, I will be nominating Christopher A. Wray, a man of impeccable credentials, to be the new director of the FBI. Details to follow.
Steve, what do we know about?
Mr. Wray was nominated by President George W. Bush as Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Criminal Division at the Justice Department. He was there till 2005. After the Justice Department, he went into private practice, apparently with a law firm. Graduate of Yale, the Yale Law School. His focus is white collar and internal investigations.
Likes long walks in the woods and puppies.
Yeah, yeah. Looks like a young guy, maybe in his late 40s.
Late 40s, yeah.
W R A Y, if you want to look him up. And we're back with part two of the conversation with John Dean after Mary Does Your Traffic. You know, the idea that Jeff Sessions had a screaming match with Donald Trump is sort of, I mean, it sort of feels like Barney Fife yelling.
Right.
Jeff Sessions, I can't picture Jeff Sessions in a screaming match, but that's one of the stories that's out there this morning that we'll take up in politics with Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein after 7 o'clock. But now back to part two of the conversation with John Dean, a legendary name from Watergate, now a CNN analyst, as we pick up on what could happen tomorrow and beyond.
Trump seems to thrive on this chaos. I gather from some of the reports that there was a lot of chaos in the campaign and in the Trump businesses.
Right.
So this is his norm. He seems to be energized by it.
But it's interesting because I think I heard you say this in an interview maybe a week or so ago. The work of the Nixon White House, even in the throes of Watergate, really until it got real ugly at the end, you were still getting policy work done.
Oh, absolutely. It was a very small part of anybody's work. You know, I'm on a scale of 10, it barely would hit a 1. So it wasn't at all consuming. Later, when Haldeman, Ehrlichman, and yours truly all are thrown out of the place, that's when it becomes all Watergate all the time.
Right.
And I'm told that's when it was pretty miserable.
And that's the tipping point could reach the you know, if we're going along the same track that it feels like here, we could be headed down that path as well. But what's the biggest misnomer people have about you and those years? Like, if there's one thing you go, nah, it didn't happen that way, what would you say?
Well, that's one, that there was chaos. You got to remember, with Watergate, it ran 928 days.
Yeah, sure.
Long time. And so it goes years. This scandal is very early. I think maybe the greatest misimpression about Watergate is how unorganized and error-filled it was. Rather than hushed tones and conspiratorial meetings, it was more blunder and stupidity.
Right.
And I think we're seeing that again. And I think that's more of a norm when scandals happen. Obviously, Bill Clinton didn't have his thinking cap on when he was meeting with Monica.
Sure.
So, you know, these things are, a lot of them are just pure stupidity. Get people in trouble.
You know, and the thing I've always wondered, because again, it goes back to me being a kid, is polling is different now. Obviously, there was no internet. You know, there was more feel to the game as opposed
to
technique.
There was no cable during Watergate.
There was no cable, exactly right. But you guys completely crushed George McGovern. Was there anybody in those conversations that said, okay, the committee to reelect, maybe we don't need to go to this extent because we're in pretty good shape? Or was the data not that available at that point and you really thought you were in a tight race?
There was good data. What Nixon's kind of a belts and braces kind of politician. And when the reelection committee was being built and the money was being raised, he didn't think McGovern was going to be his opponent. That was his dream opponent, which he helped work to achieve. But he thought it could be Muskie. He thought it could even be Kennedy. So he was prepared for a much bigger battle than he ended up having.
Yeah, and the Kennedy paranoia was a Nixon thing forever.
Yes, that was just built in.
I really appreciate your time. It's always fascinating to talk to you. And I'm going to hesitate to ask you the obvious question of what's your prediction of how this ends. So let me just tell you mine. I can't imagine in this country that you and I love that we could be in this position and find ourselves in a position where the man in charge could literally help end this immediately in one way or another by simply saying, investigate. I want this over. I'm innocent. And if he truly is, take every look you want and clear my name. But I don't see any way this ends with Donald Trump doing a 4-year term. I just don't.
Well, it's a tough question. The odds are with him staying in for 4 years. If he loses the House in 2018, he's in deep trouble, not only for re-election, but for surviving. But right now, I can't see how the Republicans would be inclined to try to move him out of office. Unless he goes down into single-digit approval, which could happen, I see Republicans staying with him. You know, at 30%, they can live with him.
And Nixon had, what, 25, 30% when he left?
At the worst, at the low point.
Yeah, it's rather amazing. I mean, some people will never see it any differently. For people that want to keep in touch with you, obviously CNN, but regularly writing op-eds for all the major papers still, right?
I do, and I tweet at John W. Dean.
It's always nice to talk to you. Have a safe trip to Washington. I look forward to your analysis.
Thank you.
Take care.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Follow-up question on the president's tweets. Are President Trump's tweets considered official White House statements?
Well, the president is the president of the United States, so they're considered official statements by the president of the United States.
Follow up on that question, is President Trump at all concerned that his tweets could be used against him at the level of the Supreme Court when the ACLU takes on this travel ban case?
Well, I think we've made it clear with respect to that, that the court should follow the law. And I think the danger is real, the law is clear, and there's no question that we should prevail at the Supreme Court.
How did Sean Spicer not walk around in a neck brace just from the whiplash of the stories that he has to tell? It is a tweet. It is a statement. It's not a tweet. It's not a statement.
How about a ban? It's not a ban.
Oh, it wait, is a ban. It's not a ban. Don't believe me. Believe what I said before. Right now, believe me. What, today? No, yesterday. Yeah, I tell you, you can get a program to follow along, but there is no program you could follow along with this. It's like a stupid mirror looking inside a stupid mirror.
Gives new meaning to flip-flop.
714, Eric Edelstein is on the phone this morning, and Pat Brady is here in studio. Good morning to you, Pat.
Good morning.
And good morning to you, Eric.
Good morning.
Where are you today?
I am actually in town, but, you know, you changing your schedule Wednesdays and Thursdays.
All right.
You know,
come over.
You know.
All right. yeah, I will
Steve
be...
said before when we were making fun of you before, you're on the Steve Harvey show today?
Yeah, I thought maybe you're doing Steve Harvey. Yeah, I thought maybe you're trying to get on Little Big Shots. Thursday and Friday, I will be off, analyzing the Comey testimony. You know, the problem with us knowing everything early is it spoils the fun. Because now Comey's got nothing he can tell us tomorrow. And let me start with you, Eric. Do you anticipate anything tomorrow that we don't already know?
I don't, but I think it could be the most watched congressional hearing. And, you know, I don't know if you can go back to Watergate, maybe Iran-Contra, but it's going to be must-watch TV. I think there's going to be a lot of, I can't talk about that because it's national, you know, national security or it's classified. But I think Comey's a savvy enough DC operator and understands the media well enough, as we learned in this presidential race, that he's not going to go up there and testify if he doesn't have one, two news nuggets that he knows will dominate the day. So what that is, I think there might be a little bit of surprise here in terms of what that is.
And, Pat, the thing that to me is significant is a guy like Comey confirming what we think we know. And what we think we know is he's going to say, no, of course I didn't tell the president that he was off the hook three times.
Yeah, interesting that I think Eric is correct, that there's not much they can talk about that's not protected by the ongoing investigation or national security or whatever, but the argument that somehow executive privilege applies, well, Trump, by sending these tweets out, even if it did apply, he's waived it. So that whole conversation is going to come in. To me, that's the bigger threat to the short-term threat to the presidency is the obstruction case, because the Russia entanglement is going to be complicated and take a long time, but obstruction is pretty straightforward.
My other question, Steve, if you don't mind, really for Pat, is if with these intelligence guys testifying today, is it possible they could, no pun intended, Trump what Comey does tomorrow? I mean, if those three guys, I think there's three of them testifying today, say that the president asked us to kind of whitewash this thing, isn't that a huge story if they say that on Capitol Hill?
I think so.
Today?
I think so. It's the Director of National Intelligence. It's the Assistant Attorney General and one other, Pat.
Is that the focus? So I thought the focus of
it's
the,
a FISA hearing, but FISA you can ask them anything.
Sure, and they will, but I thought it was more on the unmasking and how did this information get out in the leaks than it was on Trump and the Russian connection. But these people, too, I would assume have been prepped or at least talked to by the Mueller investigation, and they have to be careful on what they say not to bump up against that investigation. But, yeah, it would be a huge headline. And I think, too, the thing, there nobody, even the Democrats, will say there's been a direct link between the Trump people and the Russian hacking into our election. So maybe that would be a huge headline if somebody did say that.
You mean nobody officially?
Nobody officially. Even some Democrats, we haven't seen the evidence. I'm not saying it might not exist someday, but no one has said it exists.
But
so, like Eric says, if they do say it, it's going to be
this constant harangue that we haven't seen the evidence. John Dean made the point in the interview I did with him last half hour. Watergate was 900 days. We've been at this for 4.5 months, and people are going, hey, I haven't seen anything. Let's move on. Not quite.
I agree, but it's been effective. It's been
effective
politically. Yeah, it's worked.
Effective politically. And my point is, for the good of the country, people have to not buy into that BS.
Well, and in the 90s, that was, oh, it's all about sex. Well, it really wasn't about sex with Bill Clinton. It was about lying under oath. But they were very effective in spinning it into making it be about sex.
Is this about sex?
Is this about sex?
Is this one about sex?
I hope so. It'll be better ratings, I guess.
Exactly. It might be a little more interesting.
The Russia things get kind of boring.
Does Pat know something we don't know?
I was wondering, yeah. It took Andrea longer to get her property tax appeal heard by the city of Chicago than we've been under investigation of the Russians and Trump at this point.
That's a true statement.
It's absolutely true.
Yes.
And speaking of that, before Eric runs out of time, when we come back, I'd like to talk about the governor's race and the fact that the major labor union tripped over itself yesterday to do the earliest endorsement ever. They didn't. Nobody endorsed Lincoln this early. Oh, what's he ever going to be? Whatever happened to Lincoln? Do we know? Did he turn out okay?
He wasn't a big donor.
7:19. We'll take a break, come back, get traffic, and then more with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady and you guys too. Text number and phone number 312-981-7200. 7:19. Here's Mary. Got a foursome at the Freedom Golf Association's fourth annual golf outing Friday at Cog Hill. You can help the PGA raise money to bring the game of golf to special needs golfers, special needs community as well. We had a thing out of White Eagle the other day with a bunch of kids with special needs. Really cool. Having a blast learning the game. Register to play at fgagolf.org, fgagolf.org. I mean, you should pay to get into this, so I assume if I'm going to give you the foursome, you're going to play Cog Hill Friday. You're going to leave a bunch of money behind because you're going to buy auction items and different things. If you'd like to go, seventh caller, that easy, seventh caller, 312-981-7200. You can win right now, and please help support the cause at fgagolf.org. Pat Brady's here. Where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
And Eric Edelstein, what's your company?
AL Media.
So, Eric, after 9 o'clock this morning, and Pat, I think you're aware of this, Jason Grotto from the Tribune will be in studio. Jason Grotto led a Tribune group on a year-long process, an analysis by the Tribune, that revealed what we thought we knew. The county's property tax system shows residential assessments have been so far off the mark for so many years. The entire property tax system in the state of Illinois is doubtful at best. The assessor's office says it doesn't check. Now, this is an important sentence. Assessor's office says it doesn't check its own work for fairness and accuracy. 100 million property tax records from 03 to 15 were checked. Thousands of pages and documents by the top experts in the field. The entire system is a joke, which brings me to the news of yesterday. And yesterday in the upcoming governor's race, major labor union, which one, Eric?
What's that?
Which major labor union came out for?
Well, it's the executive board of the AFL-CIO, yeah. But it's a little misleading because the biggest unions in the state, SEIU, AFSCME, and the teachers, none of them were part of that. I mean, they were part of it, but they voted against this. So it was really these smaller building trade unions that went for them.
However, the idea that a union would come out a year and a half before the vote's taken. And do this, call me crazy, but what were they promised?
Well, here's what's going on. I mean, as we've talked about, you know, there's some members of the Democratic Party, a lot of the insiders that see J.B. Pritzker as kind of the meal ticket. And I think with the stories about his property tax, his special assessment he got on Astor Street with him being on these Blagojevich tapes, I think there's a fear that their meal ticket might be cratering. So, you know, a bit of an attempt to shore him up. But, you know, we talk about on this show all the time, whether you're Democrat or Republican, running as an insider and the guy who's part of the racket is not a way to get elected in Illinois these days. And I think the Tribune series, you know, again, all full disclosure, I'm working for Chris Kennedy. But, you know, Chris gave a speech last week. He was on your show talking about the property tax racket. And I think this Tribune series just shows we're never really going to reform our state and turn things around until we do something about property tax.
Well, now we have that. That's another whole facet to this race now. So the pension reform system, number one, we need a budget, education reform, and now property taxes. So it's now just another pylon.
And by the way, three tenets of what should be just going to work.
Right.
If you're a public official, that should just be going to work. These should not be major things that we have to overhaul, like brain surgery.
Right.
And yet we do, Pat.
Hey, Eric, is J.B. Pritzker better friends with Madigan or Rod Blagojevich, you think?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him. But
but Madigan's getting his way right now. It's Madigan's guy, right? He's going to bankroll all the other his race so Madigan can focus on the House races. That's the calculation. Well,
in a weird way, that's kind of a fair question.
It is a fair question.
The calculation. And look, Pritzker, by his own admission, when he said he was running way back, said, I'm the guy that can write the big check. So, you know, that's just not a reason to elect someone to be governor. And I think voters are going to see through that. And, you know, look, the ties to Blagojevich and some of the other stuff that's come out. And, you know, I'm told there's more on those tapes that could come out still. I don't know anything, but that's what people have sort of said, you know, it's not, it's a long way to this primary. And I think there were many people, including a lot of really good people in the labor movement, who said this early move is stupid. We should wait until it plays out. I mean, just let's see how all these candidates decide who to get behind.
Yeah, if the other unions are smart, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen between now and the end of the week politically, let alone what could happen to Pritzker going down the road because he's got so much to answer for. And I don't care how dyed-in-the-wool Democrat you might be, if you're in the state of Illinois and you go, I'm sorry, who's my guy? You tell me. It's 2017. Right. Do some homework. Right. Make a decision that's right for you.
I think it actually helps your guy, Eric, don't you? He's an outsider.
He is the outsider, and I just think, you know, we said it on this show a lot of times. The funny thing happens when the voters get involved, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like all these insiders and the people that want to control the system and control the levers of power. You know, the voters don't really like that, particularly these days, as we learned in this presidential election and everything else. So, you know, I'm not sure that Pritzker's had a very good couple weeks. Obviously, he's going to tout this labor endorsement, but it's a bit of a Trojan horse, and I think it could backfire on him.
I know you got to go. Make sure you get your Steve Harvey hit on time. So we'll connect with you next week, I hope.
Sounds good. I'll be there.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
See you, Eric.
Thanks.
Eric Edelstein, Steve Harvey's best friend. Can you hang around a little bit?
Sure, I got nothing else to do. I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah. So you got bumped?
Exactly.
It's coming up on 7:30. We'll take a break. We'll get the big story coming up. You want to tease that? What are you talking about?
We're going to be talking about, we've learned more about reality winner. And I don't mean a reality winner.
The woman reality winner, yes. The 25-year-old.
Yes, her mom is speaking out now.
And who is the winner of our golf foursome, Jake? If you would mind, turn your microphone on and tell me that, please.
Lindsay? Leslie from Naperville.
Leslie from Naperville goes golfing Friday. Thanks for your support in advance, Leslie, and helping out the folks who are raising money for teaching golf to the special needs community. FGAGolf.org if you can help. And the big story is next.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I'm not going to play much golf because there's a lot of work to be done.
I don't know where the president was. He wasn't very far away. Maybe he was playing golf.
Obama went golfing every day. Let Obama go play golf every day.
Obama plays more golf than professional players on the PGA Tour.
Playing a lot of golf. He's played more than most PGA touring professionals.
More than a guy who plays on the PGA Tour plays.
PGA Tour.
PGA Tour.
If you become president and you go to the White House, why would you want to leave the White House?
Who wants to leave the White House?
If I get elected president, I'm going to be in the White House a lot. I'm not leaving.
I mean, this guy, golf, 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 more, more. Learning how to chip, learning how to hit the drive, learning how to putt. Oh, I want more.
We need a word beyond hypocrite. What's like a hypocrite to the 10th power or something?
Hypocritian?
24 times he's been up on. Listen, Pat Brady's here. You're a golf nut. I'm a golf nut.
Yeah.
Dave loves the game. I don't know that any of us would ever. And I'm going all the way back to when they used to give Bush a hard time about going to the ranch in Texas.
Yeah.
The president's not on vacation. The president's never on vacation. He's always reachable. All of that. But, you know, when you go after Obama the way he went after Obama to play golf, and he's played 24 times since January 20th.
Yeah.
How does he not? Well, clearly the man doesn't own a mirror.
I have to recuse myself because I played close to 80 holes of golf last weekend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think I.
Yeah. You're just
can't be objective.
You're not president,
rounds.
Are you, Pat?
Right.
Not yet.
In my own mind, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Because he'd never leave the White House.
Yeah. Tomorrow, when James Comey is the guy. And sits there. As you know, these Senate hearings and the congressional hearings in general generally devolve into people trying to make a statement for future campaigns, something they can use on a record, something they can use for their commercial. There's 6-minute questions that have very short answers. Who do you expect to step up tomorrow and maybe get some news out of this guy? Because, you know, a guy like Al Franken has been kind of a pain for Republicans lately.
I think Eric is correct. Comey's very seasoned, very professional, very calm, knows what buttons to push. No one's going to get a rise out of him or any big thing. What will come out of that is what he wants to come out of it. And he's already been prepped by Mueller, his buddy that's running the investigation, the special counsel, the Justice Department. So I don't think there's going to be I don't think anybody's going to trip him up. I don't think anybody's going to own the stage other than him. He was great the last time he testified. Maybe a little sanctimonious, but he's still very effective.
Okay, is this going to lead to anything, though, as far as Russia or hacking or new investigation, anything of that sort? Is this going to just be another day on Capitol Hill these days?
There's an ongoing criminal investigation, so he's going to be limited as to what he can talk about. And we've talked about this for weeks. Yeah. Once the criminal probe started, that there's going to be a limitation on what the actual hearings can do without jeopardizing the integrity of the criminal proceeding. But I still think, because Trump waived it, that they can talk about the obstruction charge, which to me in the short term is a bigger threat and easier to prove.
There is a question that will definitely come up tomorrow, and that is, if you were sincerely concerned about obstruction, why didn't you go to your boss? Why didn't you talk to other people? To me, the timelines get fuzzy here, right? Because every day is a crisis. You forget which crisis happened before the other. But if you're working for Jeff Sessions, and Jeff Sessions either is going to recuse himself or had to recuse himself or might recuse himself because he may have some ties to Russia. If I'm Comey, I don't go to Jeff Sessions and go, hey, the president is a little shady, and here's what he said to me. I'd keep it to myself as well.
I think maybe the answer is, and he may give a different answer, but the answer I can think is, that's not how it works. The FBI does investigations. They gather facts. They interview witnesses. They look at documents. Then they make a referral over to the Justice Department. The Justice Department, they're the attorneys. They're the assistant, you know, or they are the trial attorneys for the United States Department of Justice. They take those facts. They apply the law and see if there's a criminal violation. That's how it works. So to say that he had the burden immediately that upon the time that Trump made those comments to run over to the attorney general or whoever's running the investigation and say, I think we've got an obstruction by the president. That's not how it works.
What about the...
You drive him crazy. Come on. Oh, we might... Well, you really don't. You've got some statements that there's some wiggle room in there. We don't have all the facts. And we need, before you go over to the Justice Department and say, we've got something here, I think you wait and see what all the facts are.
And it also seems to me that we're forgetting the thunderclap that was firing James Comey. Again, because it's just, there's a new outrageous thing coming up in the next 2 hours. There always is. You don't fire the guy that's investigating you.
Clear the room.
Yeah, clear,
clear the room and then tell him to take it easy on Flynn and then fire him.
And then fire him. You don't do that.
And now we're talking that he's at odds with Jeff Sessions. And I'm not a big Sessions fan, but he's actually doing the right thing. He did the right thing by recusing himself for the Russia probe because he had actually talked to the guy over here from Russia that's causing all the problems. He did the right thing. He's trying to do the right thing. But, and we've said this a million times, I don't think the president fundamentally understands the roles of government, from attacking the judiciary to attacking the Justice Department. That's not
attacking the way, your own people, too.
But that's not the way it works. And I complained all the way through that President Obama was too close with Eric Holder. There has to be a separation.
And by the way, absolutely true.
But there has to be a separation between, even within the executive branch, which the FBI and the Justice Department's in, between the president and the attorney general, particularly when it comes to a criminal investigation of the president's campaign.
Yeah, and there's a misunderstanding, too, I think, by all of us, and that is that when the phrase comes up, I work at the pleasure of the president, that doesn't mean you work for the president. You work for the people of the United States. You work for the government. James Comey only answers to the president of the United States because in the flowchart that is the government, the president of the United States can fire him and did. But the president of the United States can't ask the director of the FBI, hey, back off on this.
No, that is illegal.
Or tell him. Basically, he's saying he told him. Yeah.
Well, I'm not. That's I think that's the wiggle room in the argument. But if you were to play this out anywhere else, but in Trump world, people would be outraged.
Yeah,
it is outrage. You don't, as president or mayor or governor, tell the attorney general what you can and can't do, particularly an investigation of you.
Well, look at
that. Goes back. That's Graylord stuff.
Look at Bill Clinton wasn't even president. He's the ex-president who went up to Loretta Lynch on the runway or on the plane showing right. him pictures, and that was a brouhaha.
Well, then, too, huge mistake, and there was compounded by Comey going out and doing the press conference. But
right.
the former president, who really has always been ethically challenged, to walk across the tarmac.
To be talk, kind.
And I don't know why she took the meeting. She should have thrown him
she
out.
She wanted to see the pictures.
No,
the
she wanted to be. She wanted to keep her
know.
Spot.
Yeah.
Because at that point, Hillary Clinton was deemed the winner. That,
right.
to me, and Loretta Lynch enjoys a great reputation for integrity, but boy, was that a, that was a bad move.
Miscalculation.
We're coming up with Pat Brady in a second at 7:47. Now, I wanted to play this clip. Is this from Spicer yesterday? Spicer yesterday was asked about this. Now, if you're the...
if you're the press secretary for the president, this is a question you have to be able to answer.
How would you describe the president's level of confidence in the attorney general, Jeff Sessions?
I have not had a discussion with him about that.
Okay, last time you said that, there was a development.
I'm answering a question, which is I have not had that discussion with him.
So you can't say he has confidence in his attorney general?
I said I have not had a discussion with him on the question. If I haven't had a discussion with him about a subject, I tend not to speak about it.
There's only one explanation for that. Either Spicer is really bad at his job, or he has limited access to the president and doesn't ask him the stuff that'll make the president mad at him.
Right. But usually right before somebody gets canned, they express confidence in them. It's kind of like out of The Godfather. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Give him a big kiss and then you fire him.
Or any baseball manager.
Right. Yeah. You tell him how great
Dave, I have a lot of confidence in you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's 7:48.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Did you ever discuss with your father that you had met with the FBI?
No, we did not.
Let me ask you a question. Was the Russia investigation ever discussed?
No. No, it was a totally separate topic. So, totally separate topic, Tom.
But the next day after that meeting, your father fires James Comey as head of the FBI.
Yeah.
Did you discuss that initial meeting with your father?
No, it had nothing to do with the subject. It had nothing to do with the subject.
I understand, but did you ever discuss with your father meeting with these FBI agents?
I did not.
I wonder what makes Trump more nervous, the Comey testimony or when Eric speaks on his behalf?
Hey, nice prep job by his lawyers, though. He stayed right on.
What did he say? The Democrats are not even people? Was that same interview yesterday?
Did he? He may have, yeah.
He said, to me, they're not even people.
Oh, yeah, but remember, not too long ago.
Oh, I know.
Republicans were a basket of deplorable. Yeah, I don't even know what deplorable is, but that's what we were.
President Trump's charity foundation funneled $100,000 in donations meant for the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital into revenue for the Trump Organization by using Eric's charity. That story reported in Forbes yesterday.
Yeah, it's a mess, and I've been saying all along with the...
if you're stealing money with kids with cancer, that seems like not a great idea.
But with the open investigation, if you look at what Director Comey has done, Director Mueller, who's running the special counsel investigation, the team he's putting together, a lot of white-collar guys in there that can get a look at the tax returns and all the other stuff.
So Mueller at any time could get the tax returns. You could subpoena those at any time.
Sure. I think that's
what we understand.
It seems to what the team he's putting together is pretty wide ranging. And I know people would say, well, the IRS have been looking at his tax returns for a long time, but the prosecutor looks at it with a different perspective.
Well, and as I've told Andrea, obviously, and this is a tough break, but apparently Trump got the worst auditor in IRS history now in his fifth or sixth year of auditing these taxes. Mm-hmm. You would think it'd be a little quicker than
my audit was done in, I'd say, about 2 weeks.
Yeah. But think of the problems he's created for himself by early on not clinging this up and releasing his tax returns. The Russia thing wouldn't be as big a story because we'd know more about his business dealings and you couldn't make these allegations.
Unless there's something there,
but he's created these problems.
Yes, and because of insecurities, he could be overprotecting, but there also could be something there because what do we hear again and again and again? We hear, well, we had nothing to do with Russia. We have no business dealings in Russia. But what you don't hear is Russia has business dealings with us. They never say, right, you never hear Trump or you never hear his sons or any of them say, Russia doesn't have anything on us. There's never been those kind of statements because, again, the continuing reporting from some of the best people, Maggie Haberman, people like that, in the business is that when he went broke in the 90s, he went into a lot of debt and the only people that lent him money were Russian oligarchs, all tied to Vladimir Putin because you don't get to be a billionaire in Russia unless Vladimir Putin signs off on it. And those are the people that Trump owes, which is why he continues to defend Russia and so on and so on. And you can't be president if that's true.
I suspect, though, too, and that may all be true, that one of the reasons he's hiding his tax returns is maybe he didn't make as much money and he's not worth as much as he told everybody.
And there's the insecurity.
Right.
So, all right. So if you were going to ask a question tomorrow, what's the question you'd ask of Comey?
What exactly did Donald Trump say to you in your conversation with him about the Russia investigation as related to Flynn? And get the details and pin him down exactly as to what the president told him.
And as a recovering lawyer, is the note-taking aspect of this story standard procedure for lawyers and for people in Comey's position?
Sure. In other words, you go in, you take very careful notes when you leave a meeting, even if you don't take them during the meeting.
Yeah, usually the better practice is never go into a room alone.
Right.
Even if maybe the situation where the president asks everybody to leave, but usually one person's doing the interview with a checklist and the other person's taking notes. And in the FBI parlance, it's you do a 302. That's the report. And one of the things you're always yelling at an FBI agent to do is to do it right away so you can't question whether or not that report's accurate. It's fresh in your memory. It's right off my notes. Here's my 302. But it's not verbatim necessarily.
But would you do things like you'd say Andrea wore a black dress with white polka dots, that kind of thing? So you have stuff that shows that you were in the room?
Yeah, that's the report you can argue it's corroboration of it, what has been said in the room, because you took a report contemporaneous with the statement being made. But in this case, you would think that the report would be very detailed on exactly the question asked, even the words, and exactly the answer, because that's going to be the basis of any obstruction charge. And there's wiggle room from what I've seen so far and what the president said. Did he direct him to do it or just suggest it? I mean, I think either way it's bad. But that's the kind of legal parsing you're going to get if this goes forward.
How much of what Comey says will be admissible, say, or chargeable, if anything, if Donald Trump would be even charged? If Comey comes out and says, yes, here is what he told me, fact, 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 how much of that could be used in court, if anything, against President Trump?
Well, it's a statement. It's an admission. It's a statement. It's a defendant's statement in a criminal context. I'm not sure what would get in or what wouldn't. That's going to be, let's see, how it's charged and what all the facts are. But that's my point, and they got to wait and see exactly what the facts are before they make a legal determination on whether he's going to be charged, if
and
anything.
Who would make that determination?
That's where the FBI does the investigation. They're the police. They take it, and then they pull all the facts together, and they make a referral over to the Justice Department. Now, the investigation usually in these kind of cases can continue. In panel of grand jury, you start bringing witnesses in, and the Justice Department can work in tandem with the FBI, but the charging decision is up to the United States Department of Justice.
But there is
but
still
Sessions
a question.
Sessions recused himself, though.
Now Bob Mueller is of counsel.
Okay.
He's de facto Attorney General on this case.
He has.
Yeah, okay. He has all the powers of the Attorney General on this case.
Also, if it got to the nth degree and there were potential criminal charges against the president, we don't know that a president can be indicted while in office. That's an open legal question.
Yeah, that was briefed before the United States Supreme Court during the Nixon era, but it was never decided. And there are good arguments on both sides that you can't actually indict a sitting president. It's a separation of powers thing. There might be another way to do it on the emoluments provision of the Constitution, but it's an open question. The reality is the way to remove a president, if you're going to do it, is through impeachment. But then he's subject to indictment once he's out.
Everybody that knows this guy, Donald Trump, best and is willing to talk off the record about it says that at some point he will decide it's not worth it to go forward. But he is stubborn beyond belief, and he ascribed and subscribed to this theory his entire life that winners don't quit. And his definition of not quitting would be to stay and fight for as long as possible. But at some point, if it appears he could end up in jail, I can't imagine him sticking around.
No, and you got to make a determination whoever his successor would be if that number a long, 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 long way from that. And that's a terrible thing for the country. To me, unless the acts are murder or something really bad, you probably just pardon him to let the country heal. But anybody that really wants to know the answer to all these questions should watch House of Cards.
You know what? Don't spoil anymore.
This is tracking like nobody's business.
How about when they brought up the U.S. Supreme Court pick? I'm going, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
art imitating life?
Let me just say, there's episodes of House of Cards you two haven't seen yet that we don't want to go down those roads. It's 8 o'clock, and we're back with Dean and the premiere explanation of our brand new musical, Millard. Millard! It's not Hamilton, it's better. Coming up with Dean on 720 WGN News Next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me good.
8:13 now, Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning. I got a curt email about the theme song.
In what regard?
Yesterday. Somebody sent me a note saying, how come every time you and Steve talk about that theme song, you always say, I love you more than white guys should,
uh-huh.
and which is not what the real lyrics of the song are.
Well, that's a very important point that the viewer slash listener pointed out, and thank goodness they're worried about it. What are the actual lyrics? Do we know?
She told me, and I don't remember. But
I think it's I love you more than one guy.
One guy should. Yeah. One guy should. And I pointed out to
her.
Well,
why can't white guys love you?
Because that's not what the lyrics are.
Yeah, but well, it's okay for white guys to love you.
Okay, Bill Maher, settle down.
So you're taking the side of the viewer slash listener?
No. I explained to her that we were aware of the actual lyrics. Mm-hmm. And
that it would be what we call in America a joke?
And our characteristic commentary, our buffoonery, that we were making fun of that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if it said I love you more than Bill Maher should, that's a whole different song.
That's a whole different thing. That's a whole different thing. But I sent her a note back. And
you told her, regardless of what Steve says tomorrow when I talk to him about this, we're sorry.
That's right. I just lay on the railroad tracks when I get those.
Yeah, that's a good call. It's probably a good call.
That's the least of my hate mails this week.
Really? Why do people hate you this week?
Different things.
Yeah?
Don't like my tie. Don't like my...
How about your hair? Do they like your hair?
Yeah, I haven't had any hair complaints this week. I did have one Baldy reference.
Hey, Baldy?
Yeah.
Yeah, good one.
Some people think it's still 1962, and I'm Mel Cooley on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
I'd like to go to, hey, did you write that just now? That's cool. Yeah, Baldy. Good one. Nice. High five. All right, I want to run through this show business stuff because we have exciting news.
We do.
I think you know this.
I do. I did get an early preview over the weekend of what is to come. It's pretty exciting.
Right. So we're going to play for you some of the song clips from the upcoming, and again, you can see it splashed in lights, Millard, the musical.
The musical.
Got goosebumps again.
Yeah. All right, but first, how's your mom doing?
My mom had back surgery last night.
Right, from the gymnastics?
94-year-old. I like to call it Kula's kitchen circus that she sometimes puts on. She has this kind of stool with wheels in the kitchen that she uses in the kitchen, and she pulls herself along the edges of the kitchen counter.
Yeah, they can do.
So she can you know, cook and doesn't have to get up and get down and all that. And she slipped off the chair a while back and fractured her vertebrae. So it seemed to have gotten better, and then it got way worse. And 94 years old, they do back surgery on her last night. They inject bone cement into her vertebrae. They make some incisions on her back.
Is that right?
And they insert with a needle. First they put a needle in and insert a balloon into the fracture, kind of like spreading the vertebrae the way it should be, and then they inject bone cement to fill that void, so the vertebrae now is back to the way it's supposed to.
Well, I think it says something about your mom's overall health that the surgeons would go, sure, we'll do back surgery.
On a 94-year-old woman, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I hope they didn't step on the cement afterwards and leave an imprint.
Oh, that's true. Could Dean leave his name in it?
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
She's,
well, anyway, our best to your mom.
Poor thing.
When she got out of recovery last night, she was still loopy. And she was like, well, where am I? This is the weirdest emergency room I've ever seen. It's like, okay.
Okay, Mom, get off the sauce.
Yep.
George Clooney and Amal Clooney, they have babies now?
They now have twin babies.
Boys or girls?
One of each.
Ah.
One named Alexander, one named Ella.
Well, all right, that's fine.
Now, considering they're in show business, remarkably normal names.
Yeah.
You know, that they didn't name them, flower petal and...
and cumulus.
And cumulus, right. Everyone is doing fine. When these babies will be 10 years old, George Clooney will be eligible for Medicare.
Right. It's the old Buzz Kilman joke. I'm not concerned about my daughter dating. I'll be dead by then.
Yeah, right. He's 56. The Amal is 39.
Yeah.
They're all doing fine.
Well, good for them. That's nice.
And the nannies are probably much younger than that.
So. Yes, the nannies are in their teens. We know more about Stacey Keach now.
Listen to this now. We told you the story last week. He's in the opening night performance of his one-man Ernest Hemingway play at the Goodman Theater. He appears to become disoriented during the performance and tries to continue on, but he's repeating dialogue. He is like an old-school stage actor. The show must go on. Finally, the Goodman shut it down. And he was immediately taken to medical care. It turns out that they revealed, with Stacey's permission yesterday, Stacey Keach had a heart attack during the show. While he's on stage, he had a mild heart attack. That's what the disorientation was.
Yeah, mild to you.
And he is the show must go on kind of mentality. The man is having a heart attack.
Right.
And didn't want to disappoint the people who came to see the performance.
He's a tough dude.
He's okay. He's doing better. They say that he'll have a full recovery with some cardiac rehab and some rest. The rest of the run of the show has been canceled. They asked, do you think Steve would be available to step in?
Right.
And I said he's busy working on Millard the Musical right now.
That's very true.
He's got another commitment right now.
And even though I'm continuing to get glowing doctor's reports, I have been a picture of health in 2017. So
right. You
may want to go to the C team. Kevin Hart is in the news.
He has a new book that's out. That's kind of a self-help, motivational kind of book. And in it, the book is called I Can't Make This Up / Life Lessons. He admits to domestic violence on his ex-wife, and said that they had gotten into fisticuffs literally a couple of times. He spent the night in jail and said for the sake of the two kids that they had together, they worked through their problems. He is apologizing for all that. They are now divorced.
Did he leave a message in the book? Like, listen, if you ever do this, you're wrong. Go get help.
I think that's pretty much what the point of this whole thing was. That,
there's no excuse for it ever.
It's stupid, yeah. I kind of give him credit for copping to it and, talking about it.
Who's going to do Bill Maher Friday?
This is kind of interesting because Senator Al Franken, canceled his scheduled appearance on the show. Ice Cube wants to come on the show and talk about the N-word, the racial slur. Ice Cube, now media mogul, but back in the day, a member of the group NWA that frequently used the very same N-word that Bill Maher used in songs. So that's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, listen, this thing could be argued to death, right? But here's the bottom line. I think you could always be safe. If you're not black, don't say it.
It's probably a good rule.
Yeah.
Probably a good rule. Interestingly, 50 Cent... Because I always hang out with the rappers.
Well, Fitty to you.
Fitty is the producer of a new show that's called Power, on which one of his actors in the show, a white actor, uses the N-word in the show. I guess fairly often. And he's going to be on the TV morning show this morning, and I intend on asking him about that. Because I think I agree with your rule that if you're not African American, probably not a good idea.
Yeah,
it's
not a hard one to fix. And there's a Cher musical.
It's going to be opening in 2018
when she's just starting her comeback.
Well, it's going to be that'll be her 12th retirement, if I'm keeping track properly. But she's not even in the show. The show, it's going to be like Mamma Mia, all Cher and Sonny and Cher songs. Threaded through telling the story of her life and her career. Sonny Bono, Greg Allman, all the songs, all the hits. But she confirmed on Twitter that that's going to happen.
I saw her third farewell concert at the United Center. Third or fourth? I forget which one.
Right?
A few years ago, Dean?
Yeah. She's great.
She's fantastic.
I've seen a couple of them. I'm not sure which number, but I've seen her a couple of times.
I got to find a picture of me in the Cher wig.
Oh, yeah. Well,
where she put the wig on my head?
She has no fewer than 115 costume changes during each show.
I should have kept the wig.
Like Millard the Musical.
Right?
Millard the Musical premieres with a sneak preview of the music next.
You'll be calling his name.
Back to Dean at Channel 9. You love live theater, don't you, Dean?
Oh, yes. I live for it.
And you loved Hamilton.
I loved Hamilton. One of the best musicals I've ever seen in my life. If only there was some other musical theater production that would come along that could match that. It seems impossible.
Match it? How about exceed it?
It doesn't even seem possible that anything could come close to that in my eyes.
Let me bring John DeCoste, musical director. And John, you have been working on this for quite some time. Millard Fillmore, 13th president of the United States. Was he a vice president as well?
He was also 12th vice president and then became...
For who? Who was the president?
Zachary Taylor.
Oh, of course, Zachary Taylor. Wow. Old ZT, as we called him.
Yeah, ZT.
And Taylor died. That's how Millard became president?
6 months into office, he died, and that's how Millard Fillmore became president.
So really, this is a much bigger story than
it's
Hamilton.
You.
Hamilton never got elected to president.
Right. Exactly. Very little known about this gentleman, and very little accomplished.
Set up song one for us.
Song one, real simple. This is before he becomes president. He has a daughter, Mary, and his son that he gives the name Millard.
Here we go.
My name is Millard Fillmore. I named my son the very same, even though that name was lame. My son cried Millard, why Millard Fillmore? I made his life sad, calls me MF, not Dad, Millard Fillmore. He is my son.
Well, of course you'd call him MF. That's his initials.
Yeah, he was a little upset that... And there's only two Millards ever, and that's his father and his son.
All right, so do you have anything that captures when Zachary Taylor dies in the big move?
Zachary Taylor dies 1850 from eating cherries and milk, has yes, I know, enteritis. And this scene is just after he's died, and he realizes that he is going to be president.
All right. Music, of course, is historically accurate.
Familiar.
Millard was born up in Niagara Falls. In Buffalo, joined the Whig Party. Rough and ready, chose him as his VP and won the ballot box stuff full and hearty. Zachary Taylor had a mortal stomach ache. Guess who is the president now? Who needs a home or an office to rent? Now I don't have to spend my own money. But if that's how it's supposed to begin, another president they didn't vote in. I got the White House and I didn't even win. I'm moving in.
Wow! Look what you did there!
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this.
I could see that song becoming like... this song will be to Millard what not going to give up my shot.
Yeah,
to Hamilton.
Yeah,
signature song.
Yeah, bring down the house. Now Millard, did he have any accomplishments?
One, he only had one accomplishment. That was the Compromise of 1850, where he basically kept everything the same: slave states in the South, no slavery in the North. And this is his song about that.
Don't want no slave state.
Come on.
We're compromising because it makes our country great. Won't change one thing.
Now
we both agree you keep your slavery and just let the North states be.
Come on.
Compromise, compromise, compromise now. Compromise, compromise, compromise now. Compromise, compromise, compromise now.
That is fantastic. That is tremendous. Dean, we're going to go through some of the other songs here in just a few minutes, but so far, do you like what you've heard?
Oh, my gosh. I'm titillated.
But do you like it?
Goosebumps again. Look at that.
Aren't the Tonys this week?
I didn't say goosebumps. Yeah. I said titillated.
Yeah.
He did.
This isn't eligible for this year's Tonys, but we're going to get in next year.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Can't you see Dean's review on the poster? Titillating.
Yes.
In quotes, Dean Richards.
Dot, dot, dot.
And if it's a smaller poster, imagine the controversy.
Yeah.
Still to come.
What's the plan with this now? Is this going to launch locally first?
Yeah.
Pre-Broadway run like the producers did?
Yep, absolutely. We're going to open it here.
In the green room.
I don't know if you know this. I've already made a deal for a space. Next to the Cadillac Palace Theater is the Hugo Hall.
Oh, okay.
Sponsored by the people that made Hugos. And
all the theaters have car names now.
Yeah,
so all sponsors. Yeah.
We've got a deal at the Hugo.
So that thing for the Pinto fell through.
It did. Okay. It did. But I feel good about the Hugo. I think you're going to like the space.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's part deli.
Oh, that's even better.
But that's good because people get hungry.
Dinner and a show.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the number of times I've been watching a musical thinking, I have a taste for a corned beef sandwich.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. We'll take you through his attempt at actual election when we come back in a few minutes as John continues to preview Millard, the musical. What do you see, like a sweep? I see like a curved sweep of the letters. M-I-L-L-A-R-D.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I wasn't even going to call it Millard. That's the weird part.
Oh, creative differences beginning already.
Uh-oh. Oh, the show's going to break up before we even launch it. Uh-oh. All right, Dean, thank you.
I can't wait for this.
I know.
But I'll try. I'm going to try.
Forward to your review. And the big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And John, you'll be back in about 10 minutes to continue the preview of Millard, the musical.
Perfect.
So stand by for those of you who just, in a frenzy after hearing the teaser for Millard. Yeah, you just can't get enough.
My button lit up.
What does that have to do with this?
Nothing. It's just an on button, but it lit up.
Okay, I got it. Got it.
Funny, mine did too.
The chief mission officer for JDRF, Aaron Kowalski, is standing by. And, of course, our friend Ron Santo raised millions and millions and millions of dollars for JDRF, and we would never not be part of the mission. So we appreciate the connection. Aaron, how are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Nice to talk to you again. What is happening at JDRF?
Well, we are here in Chicago. Obviously, Ron Santo is a legend and an incredible T1D champion, and Chicago for JDRF has been an incredible city for us in terms of helping us further our mission, and our mission is to cure type 1 diabetes. And along the way, until we drive towards a cure, help people live healthier and easier lives. So talking a lot about research and talking a lot about policy, because ultimately people don't do better unless they have access to the advances that are made in research.
As a doctor, are you concerned about the continued political nonsense that goes on over healthcare in this country and what it could mean for folks with diabetes?
Well, I think it's really important to realize for folks out there listening that if we don't have access to the advances that are happening in research, we don't achieve the mission. Again, the mission for us is people with diabetes being healthier, leading easier lives, and benefiting from research advances. And one of the challenges is type 1 diabetes, which we focus on, the autoimmune form of the disease, life-threatening. If you don't have insulin, you die. It's completely fatal if you don't have access to insulin. And if you can't afford insulin, if you're making trade-offs, do I make a car payment or get my insulin, we're going to see bad outcomes. So, of course, this is a top priority for JDRF to make sure that people have access to the treatments that they need.
Aaron, at the conference that's going to be in town, JDRF executives are going to be here today through the 9th. What's some good news that we can expect to see coming out of the conference, either with new diagnoses or perhaps some better numbers, some stats?
We're making amazing progress. In fact, I was just with some folks downstairs, and we were talking about advances in artificial pancreas systems, for example. These are systems that automatically regulate blood sugar levels, and this is a project I've worked on for over 10 years, and the first systems just got FDA approval in September and are rolling out to the market, and I know some of the doctors here in Chicago have already begun to prescribe them. That's an amazing advance. We're seeing advances in the prevention of type 1 diabetes and using cells to cure the disease here in town. We have a number of funded researchers who are making tremendous advances on all of these fronts. So it's a really optimistic time in diabetes research, and I'm really proud of the work JDRF has done to help further this along.
What do you want people to know right now? Maybe people that have been recently diagnosed with type 2.
Well, I think the one thing that we want is we need people to push all in the same direction, and that's one of the powers of an organization like JDRF is we unite. You know, of course, the Ron Santo walk has drawn millions and millions of people over the years for JDRF. When you talk about policy, we need people to be advocates for this disease. So if you have type 1 diabetes or diabetes in your family,
get involved with JDRF. You can talk to your congresspeople. You can let them know that pre-existing conditions need to be covered, that people shouldn't be making trade-offs and compromising their health. So we have a great local chapter here in Chicago, JDRF. You can go to jdrf.org and get the phone number or the email address of the local executive director and get involved. It's a great organization.
Appreciate your time, Doctor. And, of course, jdrf.org, jdrfillinois.org. JD, just Google JDRF Illinois, and you can find ways to help throughout the year, whether it's the walk or any other time during the year. We hope you will. But mostly, Doctor, I think your message is take care of yourself and take care of others you love who are dealing with
this. Absolutely, and thank you so much for having me on.
Appreciate your time. It is 8:48. Let's go back to Mary for a traffic update before we get back to more of Millard. Many of you have seen or certainly want to see Hamilton. We're saying, wait till you see how cheap the tickets are for Millard. John DeCosta is here. He and I have co-written Millard. You've written the music. I'm not taking credit for the music. You've written the music. I have conceptualized the storyline.
Oh, without a doubt. You're just as much to blame as I am.
All right, we went over some of the songs earlier, but continuing with the story of right. Millard as set to music, he was elevated to office because President Zachary Taylor died. Did he run for election himself?
Well, that's it. In 1854, he decides, I'm going to run on my own. And the next song is his ballad, where he is all alone on stage, and he is singing.
It's to make this monumental decision.
Correct.
All right, let's
see. Here we go.
It won't be easy, but I think I can. When they try to explain how it works, that I still need your votes with what little I've done. You won't believe me. I was really waiting for term number two to shift gears out of first, then two, and then high. Please vote for me, Millard Fillmore. The truth is you voted Zachary. But in my 1,000 days being presidential, I'd like to win it, not be a rental.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a tear. Wow. It's a very watery-eyed moment at
so
that point.
So strong.
Yeah, unbelievable.
You better do that before the intermission because, oh.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It is a setup, yeah.
Yeah,
it's going
to be the highlights.
Yeah, nice.
Lights go down.
So for those of us who don't know our history, how'd election night go?
Well, the next song actually is election night.
Oh,
it's all about election night because here it is. This is his one shot, his moment, and this song plays.
Look, if you have one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted, in one moment, would you capture it or let it slip? Yo, and now snap back to Buffalo, where he don't wanna go. Just another so-and-so. Wish he wasn't hesitant. Oval Office resident, known to the people as the one and only leader called the accidental president. Prove yourself in a moment, don't phone it, own it. You better never let it go. You only get one shot. Do not miss a chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime. You better prove yourself in a moment, don't blow it, own it. You better never let it go. You only get one shot. Do not miss a chance to pass go. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime. Oh, 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 Millard Fillmore.
Equally as powerful.
Not exactly East Side, West Side, but I thought still strong, still strong. Now, we know he gets one shot, but Franklin Pierce is a worthy opponent, right?
I'm sorry. I just can't. That's horrible. That's so funny. Yes, it is his one shot, and he, of course, loses to Franklin Pierce. And this is the song that is played right after the inauguration of Franklin Pierce.
I put your right hand out, a Franklin Pierce handshake. I say farewell, I blew my biggest break. So much for compromising with the North and South. I barely kept things civil. Soon a war breaks out. Miller Fillmore could have been a winner, but lost the chicken dinner now. Miller Fillmore, choke, choke. Miller Fillmore, back he goes to Buffalo, hanging with his head down low. Miller Fillmore, now you're nothing but a joke.
Hardcore.
Yeah,
I mean, hardcore.
Wow.
And in the end, is he just a man with a funny name?
He is. He just comes out and says goodbye to everybody with this little quick little snippet.
My name is Millard, Millard Fillmore. Became president from a stomach ailment. I'm Millard Fillmore. This is my show.
Wow.
Strong.
Coming soon, details on tickets to Millard the Musical. John.
Woo!
Really, very, very.
Bravo.
Great preview, John.
Bravo.
Very impressive.
So nice.
CLTV joins us next.
The Steve Cochran Show.
It takes three things to make a bass movie: bullets, blood, and blades. From razor-sharp knives of all shapes and sizes to armored spears, battle axes, all these amazing weapons have a history to explore. And our team of craftsmen expertly forge your favorite iconic masterpieces from scratch. And you can bet we're going to test it.
You probably know the voice. I know you know the face. Danny Trejo. Danny Trejo is, he's more than just a member of the Bradys. Wasn't that the Super Bowl commercial where he played, was it Marsha?
Marsha, yeah.
Yeah, it was Marsha, right? Danny Trejo was a construction worker, a criminal, and a guy who has found himself, and by the way, as a terrific actor, he's earned every bit of it, has found himself one of the busiest guys in show business, and happy to have him on the program now. You know, Danny, I'm lucky. I've talked to everybody. I don't think I've ever met you before. Nice to talk to you finally.
God bless you. Thank you.
And I'm a big fan, and I mean what I said. You have earned every inch of what you got, but do you never not work?
A busy man has time to do everything, and I like to stay busy.
We're going to get to plugging this current project here in just a second, but I look at IMDb. It's an internet movie database, and you look at the stuff Danny Trejo's done through the years. Man, you've worked with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny when they ask me, who would you like to work with? Who haven't I worked with?
Right. When people who don't know you meet you for the first time because of your unique look, are they intimidated by you?
Guys that don't know me kind of like post up right away. You know, they kind of like pop out their chest a little bit. And so it's kind of up to me to disarm them. I say hello, you know, hey, what's up?
That's hilarious. How old a guy are you now?
How what?
Yeah, how old are you now?
Well, how old do you want me to be in the role?
That's a great answer.
Fantastic. Do I have this right? You go back to the early 80s when you first got in the business. Is that right?
1985.
Yeah.
I was a boxer in a movie called Runaway Train with John Voight, Eric Roberts, Eddie Bunker, my best friend.
And how did you get discovered?
Boxing with Eric Roberts. They had chose me to. Eddie Bunker actually asked me if I was still boxing because I was lightweight and welterweight champion. San Quentin, a prison that we were both in. And I said, no, I'm training. I don't want to get in the face anymore. I'm 40 years old. And he said, we need somebody to train one of the actors how to box. But they were going to give me $50 for acting like a convict. So I said, what's it pay? And he said, $320 a day. So I just said, well, how bad would this guy beat up? How many days you want me to beat him up? I didn't understand. I didn't take me 2 minutes to beat him up. And you want me to beat him up every day? And he goes, no, this actor's high strung. Might sock you. And he already socked a couple of people. I said, Eddie, for $320, you can give him a stick. I've been beat up for free, buddy. And
right.
And I wasn't making $320 a week. You know, so I started training Eric Roberts how to box for the movie Runaway Train. Oh,
and 35 years later, 33 years later, 32 years later, whatever the number is, he's still going strong. All right, here's a new thing. Man at Arms Art of War, a team of expert craftsmen, reproduced legendary weapons from scratch. So what do these guys get? They get like a hunk of metal?
Exactly. So we try to make them as authentic as they did in the old days. The only problem is it takes you a couple of years to make a great samurai sword the way they used to make it. You know, they fold over metal and fold over metal and treat it. So we've kind of speeded up the process on some of them. And it shows kind of how iconic some of these weapons were. I never knew that the reverse bow was what the Mongols used to almost conquer the world. And it made the bow twice as strong as the regular longbow, and they could pierce metal.
Wow. Danny, we just went a couple of us at the radio station here went axe throwing in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and that there's such an art to that. We learned a little bit of history about, you know, when axes were thrown. Were you kind of fascinated with that too?
Well, you know what? When I was in camp, I went to work for the federal forestry, but I had a ball and a chain, so I couldn't get away. And I learned how to throw a double bit axe, so it was like, you know, but the way they did it, you know, they would pierce metal with it, you know, and it was like it was amazing. And then the way they were made was stupendous. I don't even know the word, because you watch them take this chunk of metal, heat it up, and form it into something that is deadly.
It's a show that I, you know, listen, the immediate assumption here is, oh, guys are going to love this. I think women will love it as well.
Oh yeah.
No. It's a history lesson, but it's not like a boring history lesson.
Right.
You know, it's like, I hate shows that they're like, and then this is what we did. Now this is like a really kind of a very interesting history lesson with a lot of fun.
It's on the El Rey Network, ELRAY, El Rey, and you could Google it up anytime. And Man at Arms. Say again. Oh, illusion. Yeah, no, I thought I lost you there for a second. We got a little bit of a delay, that's all. 30-plus years of movie bad guys, and now he's hosting the Art of War. And it's funny, again, you look at the IMDb rundown, he's got like 10, 15 projects in the can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right now I've got Dead Again in Tombstone coming out with Jake Busey, and then we've got Margarita Man coming out, and then we've got I'm getting ready to do a movie called Social Security, and that's it's kind of like Die Hard, but in a senior citizen home.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, that's very funny.
It is going to be so much fun. I got to say, it's an action comedy.
That's tremendous.
If you put comedy to Die Hard.
So what are you doing with all your money through the year? Somebody told me you opened a donut shop.
We opened two restaurants, Trails Cantina, Trails Tacos, and now we opened a gourmet coffee and donut, and it is just killing it.
Cool.
I can't believe it. I love going down there and just going down the line and taking pictures and and signing autographs. And it's like it's right on the corner of Highland and Santa Monica.
Oh, good.
So it's fun to just watch all the people honk and stop and stop traffic.
Well, I'm going to come see you. We get to L.A. all the time. I'll come see you.
Come on, just let me know when you're coming. I'll be there.
Danny Trejo. Man, it's good to finally meet you. I've been a fan forever. I love how hard you work, and I love how hard you throw yourself into every role. Guys in Anchorman for 5 seconds, he stole the movie. That's Danny Trejo.
I'm sorry. We actually...
Okay, I'm sorry, too. Stay healthy, and thank you. That was a publicist who jumped in. Yes. I didn't realize we were on a timeline.
I think people would most recognize him, too, from Con Air. He's one of the...
And the woman that just jumped on, was she one of the bad guys as well?
No, she was a bad guy. Yeah, he took care of her. Yeah. Off the air.
When she connected us, she said, I'm connecting you with Steve Cochran in Chicago. And I said, hi, Danny. And he said, you don't sound like Steve Cochran in Chicago. Nope, I'm Mary. But you're going to talk to Steve.
Did you know we were on a time limit there?
I did not.
I didn't either. My publicist might want to bring that up.
She sounded fun, though.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. She sounded like nothing but fun. Sorry, I'm interrupting a live interview. Coming up, Jason Grotto from your Chicago Tribune on the mess that is the property tax system and an amazing piece of journalism done by the Chicago Tribune that's taken over a year to complete. At 9:22, we're back with that after this on 720 WGN. Did we ever announce who the winner was in the Tribune faux pas situation?
I do not think we did.
On the front page of the Chicago Tribune, the headline reads, Pritzker lands union backing. But what does it actually say, Dave?
That would be Pritzker lands union backing.
They dropped a K. Mm-hmm. Now, who won? Who was our big winner, Jake? Who was a big winner?
Joan from Glenview.
And what did Joan from Glenview win?
Pequod's. Oh, won a Pequod's pizza.
Pequod's pizza in Chicago. Morton Grove dubbed the best pizza in Illinois by the Daily Mail. Congratulations to Joan. You
know, that'd be a $25 gift card, Steve.
Okay.
You know, wrote the story. Rick Pearson.
Rick Pearson all over it.
Yeah.
And again, Jason Grotto from the Tribune coming up on the property tax mess here in just a few minutes. As a matter of fact, let's just regroup for a second and consider what we've done here. Not only did we bring you the debut of Millard, we also brought you this morning the John Dean interview. Look, anything you want from this show is likely already up on podcast. But if you miss any parts of the show, you can go to WGNradio.com. You can go to TuneIn. You can go to any of the podcast services. And you can listen to the show anytime you want. We're on demand. And catch up with the show, the shows you missed. I mean, this is show number 920.
We're inching closer to 1,000.
If you're not doing anything like right now, wouldn't it be a good idea just to go back and listen to all 920 shows, say, over the weekend?
Well, all 919. And then tomorrow you can listen to all 920.
Be 920.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
I haven't done the math. That's 3,680 hours. I'm not sure that fits in a weekend.
Yeah. You can binge it. Yeah. If you got time to watch House of Cards, you can binge us.
That's a fair point. Yeah. And on this show, less murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. Please get those podcasts and listen when you can, and we appreciate it. We are on CLTV live and also on 720 WGN, and this afternoon at 3, Rokan will be on, and Rowan Anna will be talking about what's happening right now on Capitol Hill, where Dan Coats, Director of National Intelligence and former Secretary, is addressing the Senate Intelligence Committee. The hearings today, there's four prominent figures who are being grilled today, and those hearings are supposed to contain just information related to and around the FISA warrants. Mm-hmm. The FISA warrants are to be able to wiretap, and it's a high bar to cross. You would expect Trump's nonsensical wackadoodle claim that Obama was wiretapping Trump Tower will be brought up today. But there's also a belief, and probably a correct one, that the whole Trump-Russia mess will be folded into this as well. So we'll see if there's any news that comes out of this leading to Comey tomorrow, and tomorrow at 9 o'clock our time. James Comey will be testifying. All right, 928. Big story when we come back on 720 WGN. Journalism, the way it ought to be done, is being done by newspapers all over the country. But the best, of course, your Chicago Tribune, your New York Times, your Washington Post,
and all being rewarded for great work. And Jason Grotto, well, you ought to get better parking for this story, Jason. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. You have a story that broke that you've been working on for over a year. Is that right?
That's correct. Well over a year.
And this is related to the property tax scam, my word, not yours, that we all live under. What are the bullet points here? Because we want people to go to ChicagoTribune.com and see the whole thing.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of points that I think are important for people to take away from this. One is just the utter lack of transparency in the system. The reason why it took so long to do these stories is that it's very difficult to get information. In fact, we are currently in a lawsuit with the assessor's office to get more information regarding commercial properties. Because of the lack of information on commercial properties, we focused most of our attention on residential assessments. And what we found is, this would be the second point, is that they're highly regressive. Basically, what that means is if you own a lower priced home, a modest home, you're more likely to be overvalued by the assessor.
Okay.
If you own $1 million or more home, you're more likely to be under assessed by the assessor.
Well, that seems upside down, doesn't it?
Well, it's supposed to be flat, and it's not. And the result of that is that people who own lower priced homes end up paying a higher tax than those who own expensive homes.
What's completely mind-blowing, the whole story is mind-blowing. It doesn't surprise me, though, because I've told the story of going to the assessor's office for 2 years, four different times before they got it right. The response, they don't check their work for fairness and accuracy.
It's like a fifth-grade math test.
It's like literally saying, well,
somebody's got to grade it.
It's like us saying, well, we're not going to be accurate. We're not going to make sure the microphones are on today. Did the response just completely floor you?
Well, I mean, when I first started, I didn't realize how big of a deal it was. It wasn't until I talked to experts in the field who were pretty much outraged by the fact that they don't not only do the studies that are required to make sure that you're being fair and accurate, but that you don't post them for people to see.
Anyone else do it this way?
Not that I know of, or not that we've been able to find. I can't say that no one doesn't do it this way, but it's a standard in the industry to do these studies. And they don't do them.
It's just outrageous.
No, especially with no state budget in place. And the first thing to always be to go up property taxes, assessments. And how successful are property tax when you appeal your assessments? How successful are those in being lowered?
So what we found in our study, which covered tax years 2003 to 15, was that in 2015, which was the reassessment year for Chicago, 80% of the people who filed an appeal got a reduction.
85%.
80%.
Oh, 80%.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds appealing. Pardon that. That was not intended. But having said that, the best case scenario is a percentage that's nowhere close to that because you got it right the first time.
Well, I think that's the big issue here, is that the assessor's office relies heavily on appeals to ensure fair assessments. The problem is that when we looked at who appeals, the fact of the matter is that people in wealthier areas are far more likely to appeal. So what that does is it exacerbates an already regressive system, because the people who are more likely to be overvalued in the folks that are in the lower income communities are less likely to appeal. And that's for various reasons. It takes time to appeal, as you found out.
Right.
Not everyone can take time off of work. Not everyone has a computer. And I think the assessor's office has a philosophy that it's the taxpayer's responsibility to appeal their property taxes. And that's not how the system should work. It's not how it works anywhere else. And they should make a greater effort to get it right the first time.
Why is there such what is their reason for such a gross lack of uniformity? Steve and I...
Have they given you a reason?
We could live in the same building, have the same square footage, yet my taxes will be more, his will be less. When he appeals, he gets it, I don't. Why is there such inconsistency, do they say?
Well, I think I think the assessor would say that my research is wrong, and that they would just say that they don't have a problem. Again, I think that's part of the issue here. I don't see how they could know whether or not they have a problem if they don't do the sales ratio studies. If you look at the Illinois Department of Revenue and the studies that they do, they back up what we found. It clearly shows there's a problem. And, quite frankly, the Illinois Department of Revenue hasn't done much to police the assessor's office.
Well, let's be clear on something here, because we live in a time where people throw around this fake news term, this nauseating BS term, which doesn't apply to anybody who goes out and does the work you do, or the work anybody in journalism does. So I'm not going to ask you to detail how you got the story, but you spent a year on this story. Your sources must be immense.
Yeah, I mean,
and your resources.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is something that's I was able to do because of the Chicago Tribune and the support from our readers and the people who subscribe to our website, the people who get our newspaper paid for this reporting. And if they don't do that, this reporting's not going to get done. It took a very long time because it's a very complex system and it's difficult to get information.
It's eye-opening in so many ways for those who really weren't aware but suspected there was a problem.
It just should piss you off.
It completely should.
I mean, it just should.
Well, everybody pays taxes. Everybody who owns property pays property taxes. So that affects so many people. And the fact that 80% of those appeals were overturned or lowered. Do you think there'll be any changes now because of this? Do you see a complete overhaul in the assessor's office?
You know, I couldn't say. I think it starts with some oversight and some someone independent to come in and take a look at it. I think the Illinois Department of Revenue certainly has a responsibility to come in and look at this. And the county board should probably take notice as well.
Yeah, you know, we need to hit the board up on this.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, without a question.
Absolutely.
Joe Berrios, who, by the way, has been invited on the show and will continue to be invited on the show, I'm going to shock you here, hasn't accepted the invitation yet, has a number of relatives that are involved as well. And if we go back to the cliche of old school daily, original Mayor Daley style politics, those are the offices that seem to continue to be the quagmire that give the least information to people doing reporting for the public. What sort of walls did you run into when you were asking the questions?
I mean, I think the biggest issue, came with something that's called hand checks. So if you read the stories, one thing that you'll learn is that the office relies heavily on a very crude way of coming to an assessment valuation, and that is they look at values and then will actually change them by hand or change them with some computer a program that's sort of a standalone in some standalone computer. And we tried to get a handle on how do you do this? How many have you done? What is the criteria? Experts say that you should have a very small number of these. They say that they should be clearly documented. And what we found at the assessor is that there appear to be a lot of these and they won't tell us how they do it.
How do they do that just based on manpower?
I think that's another good question. Right. I think they spend a lot of time on appeals. And, so you have to wonder, how much resources are going into actually valuing property.
What kind of business model goes, look, we're tired.
Right.
We'll just see what happens. And then we'll fix it later.
I mean, to be fair to the assessor's office, they have had some budget cuts. I think they've lost some staff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a lot of issues facing the county right now. Their computer system is outdated. They don't use, for example, geographic mapping software, which is very standard in modern assessment systems. That's not just the assessor's office. That's the county as a whole not allocating the resources necessary to do this right.
There needs to be more stringent guidelines for assessing and appraising properties as well, not just, a subjective assessor or an appraiser who might come over and say, I'm crushed for time.
That's another issue with the assessor's office is they have a philosophy that this is all subjective. And while there is some wiggle room in terms of what valuations are, the bottom line is companies do this all the time. They figure out how much they should pay for property. Homeowners do it all the time. They know what the market is. And it as complicated as it is, it's not rocket science.
There are templates. There are templates around the country that are used. This is like anything else. It develops. People share information. They go, here's how we do assessments. You fill in lines on a program. You take out a handheld digital piece of equipment. You pop in numbers. You get an assessment.
And that's why transparency is so important. The Cook County Inspector General had to take Mr. Berrios to court this year to get oversight over the assessor's office. What we need here is more transparency, not less.
And when my words, not yours, but when the Speaker of the House is involved with a major law firm that clears appeals of pretty much every major business property tax appeal in the state, that might be a conflict.
It absolutely shouldn't be allowed. And it is.
Well, I think also just to add another log on the fire is that, the state property tax code is very vague. It gives the assessor's office carte blanche to do pretty much whatever they want. There's a lot going on over there that's not codified in law. And so, to the extent that Speaker Madigan has some control over what the legislature does, I do think some of this falls in his lap as well.
Or all of it. But again, me, not you. Listen, it's amazing work. I really am glad the Tribune supported you in doing it. It says something about the Chicago Tribune
and the commitment to journalism in a time where people just have had it up to here with political, the chicanery and scandal. So good for you, and
thanks.
Keep the fight up.
Really appreciate it.
If we want to follow you and get the full story, obviously go to ChicagoTribune.com, but where else?
We're active on Facebook. You can follow me on Facebook. My Twitter handle is at capital J Jason and capital G Grotto.
With two T's.
Two T's, that's right. And so, yeah, Instagram, we're on all that stuff.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks
nice
so much. And buy a paper, you know.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. That. Would it kill you? Buy a paper.
Do it.
And get two copies. You're careless. You leave one behind.
Exactly.
It's 9:50. Bill and Wendy coming up on 720 WGN. You ever one of those ideas that seemed like a good idea at the time and... You know, we always talk about it on this show, and Wendy, you did mornings for a long time, and these 7 a.m. ideas, where at 7 a.m. it seems like a really cool idea, and then at 7 p.m. it's like the worst idea you've ever had.
Yes. What's the idea that's going through your head right now?
Well, I'm off the next couple of days.
Right.
And I'm going to drive to upstate New York to get my brother doesn't fly. Right. I have a special needs brother named Mickey, who we talk about on the show quite a bit, who you guys like better than me, and why wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, not true. Better,
it,
different.
Can't argue with
that. I like him better.
Oh, we all kind of do.
Better. I guess better is the right word.
So I'm going to drive to New York, to pick up Mickey and bring him back.
Which is a nice gesture.
Yeah, and I got my new Chevy Tahoe. I'm thinking this will be fun.
Why
lightning?
I like driving it. I mean, why wouldn't you? But now I'm thinking.
Not a good idea.
That's 24 hours in the car in 3 days.
Oh, man.
You know?
Your butt's going to fall asleep.
Seemed like a good idea at the time. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Are you going by yourself on the way?
On the way, and then Mickey on the way back.
Oh, that's a long time. How you
and I'm 56. Away? Mickey's 50, almost 59.
Yeah.
We're going to be stopping every quarter mile to pee.
Right? Boys road trip.
Boy, it's changed.
Yeah.
Not like the old days.
Do you want to borrow a Simon and Garfunkel CD?
It's a beautiful gesture, Bill.
That'll get him to me.
I'm just saying,
to Cleveland.
I'm just saying, give it to me. You're probably not going to get it back.
I don't care.
Yeah,
I just want your ride to go nice.
Want someone to go with you?
I mean, not me, but
that's so nice somebody of you, could Dave. Go.
Actually, Mike Madigan and Donald Trump are both riding.
Perfect.
Oh, man. Can I be in the backseat of that car?
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Speaking of Sounds of Silence. You know, you can rent an Uber driver. Why can't you rent a passenger? I have a new business that's coming up.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's a good idea. But then you forgot the part where, generally speaking, I don't like that many people.
Yeah, that's true.
I like
you don't have to talk to them, do you? Can they just sit there and...
They're there if needed.
Okay.